Morning, everyone. I think we're about to get started. I'm Debbie Gamble, Chief Strategy and Marketing Officer at Interac. We're Canada's payment and verification network. Trust is a big word. It unifies our families, our communities, and the way that we're governed. And it's the key element to any business's success. In an increasingly digital world, how we build and maintain trust is changing, and it's changing fast. And I believe that trust is one of the most important topics of our time. So I'm super excited to be here today live in a very noisy South by Southwest. We're competing with some pickleball, I think, next door. I'm so excited to be here with Melanie Subin from the Future Today Institute. I'm not sure if any of you were here on Saturday when Melanie and her team and Amy Webb launched the Tech Trends Report, but it was a fantastic event. So we're going to be talking today about trust and what it means to our digital future. Melanie is the Managing Director of the Future Today Institute, where she leads the consulting division. And if you're trying to understand what the future might hold, the role of strategic foresight, and how we can best navigate the dynamically changing world of tech, the Future Today Institute's Tech Trends 2024 report is a must-read. It's almost 1,000 pages this year.
970.
There you go.
Close enough.
Spans 16 sections, but magically weaves themes across each of the sections to three key points that it touches on. AI, I guess that's the topic of our time too. The connected ecosystem of things and biotechnology. And the notion of trust is actually across all of those themes. So I think we're in for a good chat today. All right. So when we think about how you guys have looked at the changing landscape, how do you look at trust?
I think trust today is a completely different paradigm than even 10 or 15 years ago. And I'll kind of make a funny reference and we can edit it out later for length. You know, if you look at some of the current stories that are happening this week, all of the controversy around the royal family and edited photos, when we're looking at some of the news that's coming out of Boeing, all of these news stories have this thread of trust kind of going through them. And part of the reason for that is that information and digital media is different today than it was 10 or 15 years ago. Today, people have the technology to access live streams of events. They have the technology to analyze an image or a video that they see. And so it's making people more skeptical of the things that they see and the things that they used to be able to trust. Now, when we bring this back to a business concept, even the nature of business is changing. When you think about organizations using AI for contract negotiation, organizations using global-based teams instead of local teams, you know, a long time ago, meaning 15 years, I guess, banking, you would go into a local branch and you would know your teller by name and you knew these people and you trusted them because they handled all of your finances, and they saw your family grow up. Today, companies are getting bigger and bigger and expanding into digital landscapes, which takes away that personal nature and therefore means that trust is no longer based on relationships, but based on whether or not you think the organization you're working with is reliable.
So I think what I'm hearing you saying is the notion of trust and trust that when we think about trust traditionally for brands or institutions, was a static thing. And that now is becoming far more fluid and dynamic. And it's changing all of the time. So how do we navigate that as organizations? How do we embed the notion of verification, which is something that my organization in the financial services world is looking at. How do we kind of elevate the importance of verification so that we know we're confident, we're comfortable, that we know who we're speaking to, that I'm talking to Melanie from the Future Today Institute, that I'm talking to your bot online, maybe not somebody else's bot. How does that notion of verification play out in the world of evolving trust?
So I think the first element that I won't hit too hard because we've had so much discussion about it is about artificial intelligence. And so organizations being transparent about when they're using AI, about when artificial intelligence has changed the characteristics of something or when it's part of the interaction somebody is having, being transparent about that can create trust because consumers are no longer skeptical that it might be AI. They're being told it is, and there's a human on the back end that you can also contact. I also think that when it comes to our data being gathered and how much information we're giving up, transparency into our data being used is critical. So a lot of consumers today know that they don't know where their data is or how it's being used. And so they expect that from advertisers, maybe from social media companies, and it's kind of a foregone conclusion. Consumers have given up fighting that. But I think that there is still an expectation of trust and reliability in some of these other interactions like financial services. And so being really transparent with customers and giving them an option to control how much data is gathered, where it's being used, can also help to engender trust, especially in this more dissipated and global environment.
When we think about trusted interact, we kind of think about it through a framework of authenticity. And I think verification is very much part of that for any of the geeks here. You know, foundational attribution and authenticity is very important. But we also look at it through the lens of inclusivity and relevance. So you mentioned that kind of personalized experience. How important is that? And when we start to think about the world of AI that can bring, you know, a fantastic, richer experience to us, where does that relevance and personalization fit in?
I think using those technologies can help bring back that feeling of being in front of the teller that you knew for your entire life. So there are technologies now that we can use to improve KYC, know your customer policies, that can gather a variety of information. It may include digital identity, but it can also include recognizing things like patterns in online usage. It can help to create anticipatory recommendations when a customer is speaking with a customer service representative. And so even if we're now working with numerous different customer service representatives from all over the globe instead of our one teller, organizations can create that feeling that they know their customer really, really well beyond simply the mandatory identity.
And then they can start to build richer experiences, solve a customer's real problems, or even open up a brand new opportunity. But I think in that verification side of things, the relevance, the personalization, there's also this notion that you can actually unlock a whole set of value. In Canada, the Digital Identity Authentication Council of Canada estimated that for the Canadian economy, validation, verification, and authentication could unlock around $15 billion of value to the economy through efficiencies like KYC that you mentioned. So this notion of, you know, not just the necessity of being able to authenticate in our digital experience, but it actually can now start to unlock a whole set of capabilities and, of course, solve some of the challenges that we have with things like growing fraud, etc. So when you're thinking about AI and really helping to drive that experience, maybe share with us a few of the themes from this year's Tech Trends reports when it comes to what AI is going to help us do to really build that new future.
Yeah, so the first example that comes to mind that I'm really excited about is real-time translation. And so we've had some master classes going on throughout the weekend. If you attended one of them, you might have seen our colleague use AI to create a video of herself speaking Japanese. She does not speak Japanese.
That's amazing.
It is amazing because her face moved as if she was really speaking Japanese. The inflection was correct, and it all came out in her voice. And so one of the elements of creating a trustworthy environment is obviously being able to communicate. My background is in banking and insurance, and in my experience, we've had a lot of discussions about people being able to access complicated documents and complicated information in their native language. Because when you're signing a mortgage document or you're accepting an insurance policy for your business, if it's not in your first language or if English is not a language that you're comfortable with, you may not feel confident that you have all the information that you need. And so real-time translation can now impact the ability of somebody to call and be automatically directed to a customer service representative who seemingly answers in their language. Even if that representative is me and I don't speak any other languages, the technology will translate what I'm saying in real time. They can respond in their native language. I can respond in my native language. And then we're having a good conversation and that customer is getting everything that they need. So that's one example, I think, of how AI is going to be really critical to creating those personalized experiences.
Yeah, I think there's obviously a massive opportunity here for us to kind of open up and unlock, as we say, some value, some new use cases. But there is also in this kind of, you know, kind of massive amounts of data that's being collected and being shared, there's the challenges of privacy. So, you know, I think you mentioned transparency earlier as key to that. We know people want more richer, more relevant experiences, but they're also worried about their data. We recently did a survey of 72% of Canadians are concerned about what companies have access to when it relates to their personal information. So how are we going to balance this? How do we balance that collecting this, you know, fantastic data points? We can create some new fabulous experiences, solve some problems. What does that mean around the privacy angle?
A big element of this is how that data is managed and stored. And a number of organizations today, I would say most leading companies, are not prepared to really execute sophisticated data management. But I'll tell you what I mean by that. There are ways to sort of lock away certain data elements behind a firewall or into a specially managed data reserve where you can use other methods. For example, there's a technique called homomorphic encryption where you can analyze the data, you can extract trends on the data, you can get learnings from the data without ever actually having access to the raw data. And so organizations can collect information, put it into a secure environment where the organization can't access it at an individual level, and then still get the learnings that they need to optimize those experiences for customers.
I mean, companies who are trying to do this and do it well, I think are going to have a huge competitive advantage. You know, others who are just collecting data, some of them are still very powerful, but I think I kind of share your perspective that that's going to change. I spoke recently to Jim Balsillie. Some of you may know him as the godfather of smartphones. So he was the CEO of BlackBerry, who now chairs the Digital Governance Council in Canada. And we talked about the risk of putting Canadians' data in the hands of companies outside of the country. So, you know, when you really think about the impact of data and how we manage that, some great tokenization techniques to kind of extrapolate the data without the PII, the personal information. How do you think that's going to play out in our kind of global reality around sovereignty and data management?
I think there's two key ways. So what we've seen in other regions and in other economies is there may be companies that are located in another country where we have similar regulation. So for example, perhaps European countries that have ethical AI and have data protection policies in place. where we say, as a Canadian company, we're comfortable working with that European company because we know that they're abiding by the same policies that we would expect. What we're seeing, particularly in the United States and in other economies, which might be a model that Canada follows, is that companies that are located in a country where there are not similar policies or where there is not trust requires those companies to create, in this case, a Canadian instance of that company that then has to be firewalled off from the headquartered company in whatever country that may be, and then has to comply with Canadian regulations. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about, Debbie, before this podcast is that in Canada, particularly, studies have shown that consumers trust financial services and other highly regulated companies more than companies that are not regulated. And so I think that the government has an opportunity to kind of create this protection around those industries to say either these partner companies need to be located in a region that has similar policies, or they need to have a Canadian instance so that they fall underneath Canadian regulation.
Yeah, we're like many countries, we're grappling with that. In Canada, we're, you know, argumentative perspective, you might say we're a bit further behind other countries that have embraced things like GDPR, the, you know, general data protection regulation structure. I'm a bit of an optimist, so I think we've got the opportunity to leapfrog that. And we're at a critical jurisdiction, kind of jurisdictional perspective around embracing the regulation for things like open banking, open data, following other countries' leads, as you mentioned, to be able to do that. And Canadians are, you know, digitally savvy, but we also have the framework around regulation where most Canadians trust their financial institutions, and Interac is in a very privileged position that we are considered the most trusted financial brand in the country. So we're grappling with how we balance that, how we deliver those great experiences, how we leverage experiences around the world, and how we actually think about the future in the context of the regulation and in the data protection, but also data rights. So let's kind of flip the conversation a little bit around some of the topics that you and the Future Today Institute team and Amy have been working on this week with many of the South By attendees. Let's talk about strategic foresight, if we might. And in full disclosure, Interac and FTI have worked together on this topic. But maybe you can share with the audience the notion of not just looking at trends, but looking at signals, mapping out scenarios, and thinking about how your organization and you can actually benefit as the kind of future unfolds.
Absolutely. So for those of you who are not familiar with strategic foresight, who are listening or who are not familiar with Future Today Institute, strategic foresight is really just good strategy. It uses data and evidence that we have today, and then it combines it with the things that we don't know about tomorrow to help ensure better decision making. And it helps organizations figure out where to play and how to win. And so part of strategic foresight is playing out different potential outcomes. And it actually has a history in war gaming and in governmental use. And so in those instances, what individuals did is sort of mapped out, well, if we move this way, we might have this outcome. If we move this way, we might have this outcome. So similarly, talking about it in the context of trust. If a big organization is about to, say, invest in a huge digital transformation effort, or they're about to overhaul their data management practices, using scenario planning and strategic foresight is a way that leaders could play out how these different approaches might impact consumer trust and might impact their overall organizational operation before they actually make that huge investment. So they can say, here are some of the things that we know about today. We know that consumers are increasingly skeptical. We know that consumers need to see more proof and evidence and validation that they are safe. And we know these other five things. And here are some things that we don't know. Maybe we don't know whether or not a certain regulation will pass. Maybe we don't know whether or not a new data management technology will become available. And then we can say, all right, it seems like maybe we've got three different options for how to manage this data. If we choose option one, now let's play out what the next order impacts of that would be. And ultimately, will that make our consumers feel protected, and will they feel like they can trust us? And then so on, and doing that with the other options. So strategic foresight is really just playing out what might happen before you dump an enormous amount of resource into it, so that ultimately when you get to the end, you knew that that was the outcome you were going to get to.
I think it's also hugely beneficial to an organization just grappling with the options, right? Grappling with how you might actually apply some of the tools that you have. Where are the gaps? We spent a fair amount of time together working through this at Interact and pull the teams together to think about, you know, where should we be playing in the market? What kind of value can we continue to bring? So I think it really ultimately really does hone in on that organization's strategy. And as you say, where should you play and how should you win? One of the additional themes in the way we look at trust is this notion of inclusivity. In the trends report, you touch on the potential of the great digital divide. So, you know, there are definitely some dystopian scenarios we could all map out. What kind of advice would you give leaders when you're thinking about inclusivity in as we're becoming more and more digital? What are the things we need to make sure we consider so that our offerings are available to everybody?
Yeah, so I'll tell a quick story, and it's related to healthcare, but it comes back to this idea of inclusivity. My first sort of advice that I would give is to consider unintended consequences. So thinking about AI, I think we all know now that AI models are trained on data. There was an instance a few years ago where an AI model was created to anticipate healthcare usage in different neighborhoods. And so it tracked data from a variety of different neighborhoods, economically well-off neighborhoods, economically disadvantaged neighborhoods, and everything in between. And the idea in the end was to anticipate where they should put a medical establishment, like an urgent care center. The data came back, and the insights were that individuals in the economically disadvantaged region and neighborhood would not need healthcare, that they are not using healthcare and they're not going to need healthcare in the future, which I think we can all say logically doesn't quite make sense. So why did this happen? Because the historical data showed that those individuals weren't using healthcare. Why weren't they? Because they didn't have access to it or because they couldn't afford it. But the data didn't take that into account. All the data said was they don't use healthcare. So that was an unintended consequence. And if you didn't analyze the outcome of that model, and if you didn't say, does that make sense? Does that resonate with what we already know? Then you might trust that information and not put any healthcare establishments into that neighborhood. And so it's the same thing. You know, we can pull in data, we can do it even with good intention. But if we don't contemplate the unintended consequences of the data that we program that AI model with, we can end up with these insights that are contrary to the inclusivity efforts that we're working towards.
And when we think about that notion of building trust, you know, with your client, trust across your organizations, how do you think that kind of, is there an opportunity for collaboration across the ecosystem? How do we get our arms around this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think financial institutions, even enormous ones, have an incredible amount of knowledge and information about their market, but there are so many things that they don't know. And so I think one obvious partnership that's required is with technology providers who are familiar with either hardware and how it's being built and what it can do, or who are working in software or data management. Who can really help to avoid those unintended consequences and help those solutions be built effectively at the first try. I also think partnerships with other organizations that play in the markets or the regions that you're working in, who know those regions really well. That could be healthcare, you know, it could be education. These are organizations that know the individuals that you're working with. And from a financial services perspective, you know, money sort of pervades every aspect of life. And so getting that perspective and getting that information is crucial to building these value-added solutions that are really more than just a simple product or a type of account.
And how does that relationship extend to the, you know, the public sector? So our policymakers, you know, I think we've talked about how the kind of pace of change, the pace of technology and how it's impacting us is hard for anybody to keep up with. So how do our regulators and, you know, how do they get to grips with this? We referenced GDPR. There's lots of other conversations going on around the world around privacy, data protection, et cetera. So how can we help our public sectors really do the right thing?
I'll give an example from the U.S. perspective, but it applies to Canada or any other government. What we're seeing in the U.S. right now is lawmakers trying to learn about technology by having experts come in and speak to them for an hour. It's impossible to become an expert on these technologies in that amount of time. And it's also not necessary because the experts exist in the form of industry and private sector. And so my advice to any governmental leader or lawmaker or regulator would be to lean on the organizations and the companies that know the technology well, that know these markets well, and that understand what the needs are. It's not necessary for lawmakers to become an expert on AI or on data management, as long as they're getting their information from reputable sources that have experience in this space, which in this case is the private sector and these companies. And we're not seeing enough of that, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a massive opportunity there. You know, it's an obvious role for people like the networks, like Interact in Canada, like lots of others to really help convene the ecosystem because there's a lot at stake here and we need to get it right. We're coming to the end of our talk, so let's have a bit of fun. Can you complete the sentence? Trust is another word for?
I think trust is another word for relationship. You know, I think that we can't replace relationship with technology. I think we have to keep the relationships and the humans in the dynamic in order to ensure that trust remains.
I love that. And, you know, you guys have spent so much time looking at the trends and the implications of technology. So what's the one thing organizations and leaders, many of whom are here today, should be thinking about as they continue their time at South By and move forward? What's the one thing that you would ask them to take away?
It's not going to be an individual technology. Instead, I would hope that leaders are constantly taking a step back and looking at their ultimate goal or vision that they're working towards to make sure that their near-term strategic steps are still the right steps to take. You know, technology is moving at a rapid pace. So is societal change. And so if leaders built a 5 or 10 year vision 4 or 9 years ago and haven't changed it since and are still doing just executing day-to-day strategic action based on that vision, it's probably out of date by now. So leaders have to regularly step back, evaluate that vision and that goal, and make sure that the steps that they're taking are still the right ones to take to get where they want to end up.
That's fantastic. So for anybody who hasn't yet seen this year's Tech Trends Report, how do they get a copy of it?
You can download it for free at www.futuretodayinstitute.com/trends. And I will say it's clickable and it's searchable, so you don't have to read all 1,000 slides to get the information that you need.
Well, this has been fantastic. A lot to consider here, especially in the world of trust, but I'd like to say a huge thank you, Melanie Subin, for joining us today on Everyday Trust. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.